not live by. Watch the heart of my nation die. Oh, not me. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on my Bible. Don't tread on my guts. Don't you tread on my faith in God's only Son. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free, and I damn sure fight for my liberty. I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me. Time has come, gonna take a stand. Spread these words all across the land, from sea to sea. Don't tread on me. So tell your neighbors, tell all your friends. Gonna see that eagle flying high again. You better believe. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on my Bible. Don't tread on my guns. Don't you tread on my faith in God's only Son. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free, and I'll damn sure fight for my liberty. I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me. Yeah, I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me.
Hey, everybody, welcome back into the show. Second hour on this Friday, January 10th, 2025 edition. Your Defending Fathers with Trucker Randy Bishop here on the Patriot Voice Radio Network. Joining us every Friday from 10 to 11 is Pastor Chatfield. He brings a history lesson, a discussion to the table for us, a lesson plan. And this one goes to the United States Supreme Court decision, Marbury versus Madison, back in 1803. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
What was the decision of Marbury versus Madison? What was it based in? What was the premise of the case? What was their final decision?
Okay. Well, here's the story. The presidential election of 1800 was very disputed, very hot, and it was John Adams running for a second term against Thomas Jefferson. They were old friends, both signers of the Declaration, both very important in the Revolution. Neither one were at the Constitutional Convention because both of them were overseas serving. Jefferson was in France, Adams was in Great Britain, and they were serving as ambassadors. But they came back. Adams, when the Constitution was ratified, Adams became the vice president. Jefferson was the Secretary of State. And Alexander Hamilton was the Secretary of the Treasury in the first George Washington, or actually both George Washington administrations. But it became obvious that there was a division right in the cabinet of George Washington. You had Alexander Hamilton that was wanting more national power. He wanted the assumption of the state war debts during the Revolution to be carried by the federal government. He envisioned a national bank. He envisioned a strong economic power with a stronger central government. Whereas Jefferson envisioned more of an agrarian type of country with strong state governments and a very limited national government. And so that was the direction they were headed. Hamilton and Adams were kind of pro Great Britain, and the Jeffersonians, sometimes called the Republicans, were pro-France. And what did you think about the French Revolution? So there was a number of dividing points. It's the beginning of parties in America. And that happened in the second administration of second four-year term of George Washington. Washington set that precedent. He got out. Adams was elected in 1796. It wasn't hotly contested in 96, but by 1800, hotly contested. And remember, go back to the 1798 Alien Sedition Act signed by John Adams into law. It was a Federalist idea. The Federalists were concerned about what was going on in France. They sent over an envoy, and he was Genet, that was touring America and I'm very pro France, and even spoke against Washington, and Washington sternly rebuked him for that, and but because of that, they passed the Alien Sedition Act, which says, "Hey, wait a minute here, you can't come over and do this," and we're going to call it sedition when any newspaper even prints things against the president or his administration is sedition, which is really, you know, ignored the First Amendment, you know, concerning freedom of the press. And that sure.
went too far, and freedom of speech.
It went too far. Adam signed it. It went too far. And I think, and most historians say this, because of that, that tipped the balance of power back to the Republicans. Jefferson was elected.
Excellent. Now, after the break, we will get into what the heck Madison versus Marbury. What was it about? And we'll talk all about it. We'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. I support this show, and I would like to offer you our biggest discounts for listening. So please go to our website, MyPillow.com, and put in the promo code at the end of this message to get the biggest discounts. Again, thanks for listening, and God bless.
Thanks, Mike. Folks, go to MyPillow.com and enter the promo code TRUCKERRANDY, or call 800-654-9659.
Hi, this is Ian Murphy from the Iron Pig Smokehouse in downtown Gaylord. Join me every Tuesday at 10 a.m. with Trucker Randy for an update on all things happening at the Iron Pig. We're open 7 days a week and serving breakfast Saturdays and Sundays. You can order online anytime for takeout, curbside, and delivery at ironpigsmoke.com. And be sure to keep up with our legal battle against the health department by subscribing to our podcast at fuelcasttv.com.
Are you one of the many people that have always wanted to give to your favorite charity or non-for-profit such as your church, school, or local community, but believe that it's way out of your budget, a goal that you've always wanted to fulfill? Let me show you some strategies that would benefit you and your favorite charity. Call Laura today at Bogdan Insurance, 231-264-6890. Again, 231-264-6890. Serving Northern Michigan since 1998.
The Sioux Animal Hospital in Sault Ste. Marie has been in the same location for 35 years. The owner, Dr. Jeff, specializes in providing all aspects of care for your animals. From annual shots to complicated bone and soft tissue surgeries, Dr. Jeff can take care of any animal. So call him today at 906-635-5910. From dogs and cats to cows and horses, Dr. Jeff loves them all. So give him a call at 906-635-5910.
At Royal Tire in Petoskey, we know that you've got things to do and places to go. And you need safe and reliable tires that will get you there and back every time. Tires like the Michelin Defender LTX or the Michelin Cross Climate 2. We believe in these tires so much, we put them on our own vehicles. So stop by Royal Tire today and let our tire experts find the right Michelin tire to keep you and your family safe. When you think tires, think Royal Tire in Petoskey.
I'm excited to announce Bernadette Smith, our current GOP vice chair, as my co-chairman. Her energy and passion are truly inspiring.
Thank you, Jim. I'm thrilled to join forces as we work together to raise the funds our party needs to champion President Trump's MAGA agenda and to defeat the Democrats in 2026.
And together we will make Michigan great again.
Paid for by Jim Runstead for Michigan Republican Party state chairman. Hey, everybody, welcome back into the show. So let's talk about this Supreme Court case and exactly who were the plaintiffs, the defendants. What was the issue that went all the way to the United States Supreme Court?
Okay. Now, let me just give a preface. I've always talked about this because this case, Marbury versus Madison, which was finally decided a couple years later in 1803, establishes or asserts the idea of judicial review, that the courts have the authority to declare a law unconstitutional. John Marshall's famous, who was the Chief Justice, famous for saying, any law repugnant to the Constitution is void, and implying that it is up to the court to decide that. Now, I just want to point this out, and I've tried to teach you guys this, in case anybody cares about history. That was he asserted that assertion. A lot of people didn't believe it. Jefferson didn't believe it. Madison didn't believe it. In 1898, after the Alien Sedition Acts, both Virginia and Kentucky issued what were called Nullification Acts. They were saying a state has a right to ignore an unconstitutional national law.
Now, that was 1798.
Right, before Marbury versus Madison.
Got it. And rephrase again the basic premise of the case. What they said specifically in their pleadings was what?
Oh, okay. So here's what happened. So Adams lost in 1800.
No. I understand. But I want to understand exactly what the case is. I'll let you backtrack. But I just want people to hear specifically so they understand what was actually being considered in front of the Supreme Court.
I have to give you the background or you'll never get it. So a couple of days before Jefferson took the oath of office, the Federalist Adams still controlled the presidency and the Senate. Adams issued created a whole bunch of new judgeships based on the Judiciary Act of 1789, and the Senate, which was controlled by the Federalist, quickly approved them. They wrote them out. He signed these commissions. This is, by the way, in history is known as the Midnight Judges. Just a couple of days before Jefferson was to take the oath of office. So he gives them to, at this time, John Marshall, which is strange too. He was Secretary of State under Adams, but then Adams had appointed him Supreme Court. So he's kind of the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, but he's kind of working as Secretary of State. But he agreed to take these commissions of these Federalist judges and let's fill all these benches with Federalist judges. And so Marshall has his brother go around and he starts delivering in person these commissions, an official document, a legal document that says, okay, you are now a judge. Your judge. And he gets them delivered. But a few of them he didn't get delivered. There was a Maryland businessman whose name was Marbury. He did not get his commission. So Jefferson takes the oath of office. Finally, Marbury gets his commission, takes it to the new Secretary of State, which is James Madison. Says, okay, here's my commission. Jefferson told Madison, you can't deliver that. I mean, he's not a judge. He didn't get it to us in time. I'm the president now, and I don't approve of this. It's unconstitutional. That was the argument that Jefferson made. This is null and void. And
because his political ideology did not line up with John Adams, he did not want one of John Adams' cronies getting that judgeship.
Well, that's the political part side of it. But there was a legal side of it. Did Jefferson and Madison was the Secretary of State, did he have legal authority to do this?
Sure.
Does everybody understand that now we have a new administration? We have a new president. This is new. And this is an important thing we'll talk about in a little bit. Every 2 years in the United States, you have a new house. Every year, every 2 years, that's a new house. I don't really remember what house number this is. 100 and whatever it is, you'd have to look it up.
Sure.
And the same thing's true in Michigan. I think we're now somewhere around like the 105th. Is that where we are? Michigan House. It's a new government. It's a new government now.
Well, in Lansing, you're referring to.
Yes, but this is true.
110 state representatives, 58 Republicans, 52 Democrats.
Right. But it's a completely new legislature.
Oh,
now.
I'm sorry. Yes, yes, yes. The legislative session is the 103rd.
The 103rd. Okay.
Right.
So the 103rd isn't the 102nd. It's different. Okay. You have a new speaker now. You have a new government. So that's what Jefferson was mostly arguing. He was saying the political side was, you're right, he didn't like these judges. They were Federalist judges.
Yep.
And he was a Republican. He didn't want Federalist judges. But legally, he said, these were not delivered. I don't approve of this. I'm the president now.
Right.
Because
Marbury's basically did not receive the paperwork that elevated him to being a judge, therefore it wasn't received, it wasn't turned in, it wasn't presented. He basically missed the deadline, and therefore Jefferson's saying, sorry, dude, I don't acknowledge your delivery.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, I got it.
Yes,
okay.
And so Marbury takes this to court. He sues. Hey, I have a right to this. So this comes, now this issue comes to the new Chief Justice John Marshall, who comes up and they make a decision in 1803.
Again, a puppet of John Adams.
Puppet. Somebody with a similar philosophy. I wouldn't say puppet, but whatever, you can call him.
Well, Secretary of State under that president, Adams.
Yes, yes, but now Adams is out of office, and now he's the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court.
Right.
Okay. And so now he's going to really play this very coyly. On the one hand, here's what he says. He says, well, it is the court's prerogative to decide this case. It is our constitutional authority to decide this case. And that the delivering of the commissions to these judges was just a formality. It was just a tradition, which really makes no sense because we had no tradition at this point. I couldn't say this is a tradition.
Yeah,
but anyway,
this is the first time we ever did it. Okay.
Okay.
Got it.
So this is a tradition. This is just the way it is. So it didn't really have to happen during the president's tenure. This was just a tradition. Okay. And so, yes, he should. He is the judge. He is the judge. But on the other side, he said that there was one provision of this act, provision number 13 in 1789, which was unconstitutional. Therefore, based on that one provision, we're saying, yes, he would have been a judge, except for this one point. So Marbury never became a judge. So on the one hand, he placated the Jeffersonians. Okay, we won't let him be a judge, Marbury. But on the other hand, he placated the Federalists by saying, yes, the Supreme Court has this constitutional authority of judicial review to declare a law unconstitutional. And therefore, it just sat there. Now, judicial review is the asserted and now well-established idea that the Supreme Court has the constitutional authority to declare a federal law unconstitutional. And like we talked about a couple of weeks ago, that is now expanded because of the 1947 Everson case, that the Supreme Court has the constitutional authority to determine whether state law or state constitutions are constitutional, which is way, way past even what John Marshall would have wanted. They would not have wanted that. But that's how powerful the Supreme Court has become. Now, judicial reviews, I've always said this on your program. I says, judicial review was the main thing. I really got into the details and tried to explain the details. It was a tricky question. It was a tricky question. And now the power of judicial review is well established. For me to argue otherwise is, they would say, Chatfield, you're way behind the times here.
Yeah,
the whole notion of state nullification is that's archaic. You can't do that. I would point out I'm still not 100% sure that's true. Sure. But I'm in a great minority. At some point, a state could challenge things. Texas has come pretty close to challenging things like this.
Right.
When the federal government didn't control their border, and some court told them, "Oh, you can't control your own borders from." See, Texas would argue this is Mexico to Texas, whereas federal courts say, "No, this is Mexico to the United States." And there's a constitutional issue here. I mean, it's pretty complicated. So that is Marbury versus Madison. Now we can talk about judicial review more, or we can talk about what came to light this week in Michigan. So I'll let you direct which way you want to go with this.
Right, because and just to back the bus up a little bit, Joe Biden, all the things that he's been doing, pardoning people, sending more money to Ukraine. He banned the offshore ocean drilling for oil. There was some fear and talk about him filling a lot of judgeships before leaving office. Chuck Schumer has quite a few in his vest pocket. And until they lost the majority here after the beginning of the new Congress, Biden was going to try to ram a bunch of judges through that's been pending to be filled, vacancies. This sounds a lot very similar to what happened with those judgeships back in 1798.
Exactly, except there were more because of the Judiciary Act of 1789, they were creating judgeships and then filling with Federalist judges. And both
right.
of them got approved because the Senate was controlled at that particular moment by the Federalists. But when the new Congress came in, the Republicans took control. They didn't have the votes anymore. So there's political issues here, but there's also legal and constitutional issues that are at stake here.
Right. And I've got a breaking news story. The sentencing of Donald Trump just came out. Unconditional discharge of the case. No prison, no probation, no conditions, no fines, no fees, no penalties.
Amen.
Unconditional
Good.
Discharge of the case.
Good.
That, of course, was the criminal case there in the very slated New York City 34 felony charges convicted of, kangaroo court, complete judicial misconduct by the judge, Michonne. This was going to be thrown out on appeal, but do you think he saw the writing on the wall, Rusty, and decided
so.
Just to throw in the towel?
Yes. Yes, that'd be my guess. Yes.
Yeah. Unconditional discharge just happened, actually 3 minutes ago in New York City. Let's talk about the tee up for the state of Michigan now that the Republicans have taken back the majority, 58-52. Like you said, this is a new legislature. This is the 103rd legislature. This is a brand new ball game, and it's even affecting the Senate, how they now are seeing the writing on the wall. You've heard about this tip wage law that
yes.
goes into effect?
Nine different bills
going into effect on February 21st. I think that's kind of where the direction you're going. So we'll
yes.
talk about that. Short of the bottom of the hour break, the news break. I'm Trucker Randy Bishop. He's Rusty Chatfield. We're your defending fathers. We'll be right back.
This is Michigan News Source, your award-winning news team.